Welcome to Breakfast at Beverley's, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the fascinating world of transport and logistics. Join your host, Beverley Bell CBE, an industry expert and former senior traffic commissioner, as she navigates the highways and byways of the industry. From sunrise to sunset, we're here to accompany you on the road, bringing you insights, advice, and thought-provoking conversations with notable guests in the field. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Well, good morning to you, Alison. I hope you've enjoyed your breakfast after your very early start this morning.
I have indeed.
Excellent. We'll talk more about what we have for breakfast later, but I'm delighted to welcome you today to this podcast. And whilst you're a very well-known figure in the transport industry, for those who don't know you, just tell us a little bit about your current role at the moment and exactly what you do there.
So at the moment, I'm Fleet Risk Director at Matrix IQ. My side of the business is looking at driver behaviours and compliance. So using driver data to identify risk and then gap, you know, use training and things like that to bridge the gaps. But everything really from, you know, making sure that licences are checked properly, that there's a proper training programme in place, people are risk assessed. So it's quite a holistic look really at driving in all forms, so from cars, vans, HGVs.
And how long have you been in your current role, Alison?
Just over four years. Time flies.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
So how long have you been in the transport industry?
Ah, now that's a question. So I've been specifically in transport safety for about 14 years. Previously to that, I was in health and safety for well over 20 years. And it was while I was in a health, safety, environment and quality role that I realised was a real disconnect between the gravitas put on transport safety as compared to anything else. So all occupational safety requires people to be qualified, assessed, risk assessed, and yet that just wasn't happening in the transport side of the business.
And I think it still doesn't happen a lot in the transport side of the business. In my old role, I would always find that directors would say, we have a monthly directors meeting, health and safety is always at the top of the agenda, and I would say, where's operator licensing? And they'd look at me and go, what do you mean, love, we don't have that on at all. So how do you make that message heard and then acted upon in your work generally?
I think one of the first things to do is I always speak to companies about the risk registers. And that's something that I found in every company I've ever worked in, that transport does not appear on the risk register. And that's one of the questions I always ask first is, so what happens if you lose your operator's license?
And they look at you as one of my relatives would say, gone out.
Yeah.
And say, well, that's not going to happen, is it? And you say, well, it actually could. Yesterday, I looked after an operator at a public inquiry, and the senior traffic commissioner did say to the operator, what are you going to do without your license? Yeah. And that sort of frightened him. But it's easy in the PI room. How do you do that in the boardroom or in the driver's crew room? How do you get that message over, Alison?
I think in the boardroom, it's about finding what's important to somebody. So lots of companies, and there are lots of board directors who are very safety focused, and it's about getting them to understand that driving's like any other work activity. So it needs assessing, controlling, people need to be trained, people need to have the experience and knowledge to do the job properly. So I think that's an easier sell. I think where it's difficult is where people haven't really got a safety focus. But I think it's kind of widely accepted now that safe and efficient driving and safe and efficient vehicles actually save money over time. So even if somebody, you know, I don't really care what reason somebody wants to do it, as long as you want to do it. And sometimes you have to play the finance route over the safety route. But, you know, they work hand in hand.
I absolutely agree with that. Often it's the bottom line that dictates what a company does or, more importantly, doesn't do. And if you can sell it on the basis of not only will they make money, but they'll save money, that's when they'll start to listen.
Yes.
But there'll always be those that don't care either way. You talk in your social media, in your work generally, about having this positive motivational approach. How do you motivate somebody like that who's like, do you know, Alison, I'm really not bothered?
I think it's about finding what's important to that person and engaging them. There's always something that somebody's interested in. And I do really think that personal approach is so important, because I think quite often safety in general can be seen as being very wooden and very sort of almost anarchy. And I think once you get to know somebody's person and start to talk to them about, I think for me, it's we all use the road. So that person who you're speaking to, they use the road, the family use the road, loved ones, friends use the road, and they're the very roads that their transport's on. So why would you not want them to be driving safely? Because it makes everybody safer.
I absolutely get that. And in a way, when we look at O-licensing and the commercial fleet, they're not a risk because they are regulated. Yeah. A lot of smaller vehicles, vans particularly, doesn't matter what colour they are not regulated in the same way. What's your view on the van fleet? And how do you think operators of van fleets can make sure that they improve their standards?
I think actually the van fleets are what we need to focus on. And particularly where you've got mixed fleets,
yeah,
you can look at the HEVs and they are far more compliant. And the drivers see themselves as professional drivers. And I think the problem with van drivers is they've usually got another role. So they see themselves as a jointer or a, you know, road worker. They don't see themselves as a driver.
What about the courier drivers?
The courier drivers, again, a lot of that is around how they're paid, what's expected of them. What I spoke to just before Christmas, I was speaking to a driver. It was 7 o'clock at night and he delivered something to me and said, oh, I've got 30 more deliveries to do. And they've been working since 8 o'clock. Now, in that sort of situation, you can understand how a driver may not put the way they're driving at the top of the list. It's about get those parcels to that company, and I think that that's where there's probably the biggest job of work to do, definitely the biggest job of work to do. And I think it is starting to slowly come. The couriers are starting now to look at things like telematics data and actually start to think about the things it affects, because certainly in terms of things like insurance premiums, it has a huge effect by reducing, you know, your collision rates. And also the petrol use. And so there's all those sort of things that you can maybe target the van fleets with.
I know from the work that I've done with you in the past that you're very keen on selling compliance through reduced insurance premiums.
Yes.
And the impact that that has.
Yes.
Do you think that's one of the hooks in to make operators comply and to make or to drive better behaviour by the drivers?
I think it's a really big one. I think insurance and fuel usage are probably the two that are the biggest, the easiest sell in terms of return on investment. But certainly for insurance, I think now as well, a lot of insurers are looking at risk-based insurance. So the market is definitely changing with insurance from perceived risk, so based on people's historical claims, which is never up to date and never what's happening now. And they're starting now to look at actual risk. So what is that fleet doing now? And there's a number of the new insure tech companies particularly who are actually basing the monthly premiums on the actual risk profile of vehicles. So I think that is our biggest lean in now. I think that is going to make a huge difference to the industry.
That's interesting to know. So you work full time in the industry, but yes. I think you also have a couple of roles outside. Tell our listeners what else you do outside work. And I'm not going to ask yet about your music.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask about some voluntary work that you do, maybe once a month or whatever. Just tell our listeners about that.
Yes, so I do. I've been a magistrate for 20 years. Currently sit on the Swansea bench, which is where I live now. I really enjoy that.
Why do you do it? What motivated you to do it in the first place? You wanted to send people to prison?
Yeah. No, I think what happened was I worked for a county council.
Right.
And I was often in the chambers debating with the councillors and trying to get them to agree to various things. And one of them, after a particularly, not heated, but in-depth debate, said, I think you make a really good magistrate, because it's about being able to not understand the law necessarily, because there are legal advisors to do that, but to be able to pick out salient points and understand what an offence charge is and actually what makes that and the evidence that's been given, does that actually apply to the charge? So it's about being logical, really. It's about being able to sit down and logically write a scenario out afterwards.
Okay. You've been doing that how long? 20 years?
20 years.
Okay. So just looking at that, sitting on the bench.
Yes.
At the time that we're recording this, there's an advert out for a traffic commissioner's post. Are you going to apply?
I don't think so. No, I think, I mean, obviously, in the company I'm in, I think it's a very important role.
Oh, and you're
think,
such a creep.
I think if you get the right person in the role, it's wonderful. I'm still wanting to be hands-on in the industry and to make a difference at make those boards understand rather than sort of catching them when they're not doing it.
But don't you think a TC does that?
I think so, but I think it's about catching them maybe earlier than they have to go to the TC. So absolutely they do. And, you know, people understand what they need to do to become compliant, but it's quite nice to be able to get people to do that prior to them having to have something imposed on them, shall I say.
So if any of our listeners have either applied or about to apply or in fact have got the role, what advice would you give them from the work you've done in the past 14 years in transport, and we won't say how many years before that in health and safety, what advice would you give to the new traffic commissioner?
I would say that there's obviously a job of work to be done there to ensure that vehicles are safe, because that is the main thing, isn't it? It's making sure that those fleets or safe on the roads, really, the bottom line. But I think there is a way maybe to engage with people. And I think sometimes, and this is something I've learned from court as well, there's a lot of terminology and jargon that we have written down in court, but that doesn't really mean anything to the person stood in the dock. So I think that engagement and making sure that people actually understand what it is that you're telling them they need to do or advising them to do, I think that's really, really important.
Good communication skills.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Because people buy from people, don't they? And they're going to listen and engage more if they think you're engaging with them rather than talking at them.
Absolutely, yeah. There's nothing, I mean, it's just to be condescending. I know what I'm like, I just switch off straight away.
Now, you shouted at me before when we were listening to Alexa. You said I was even bossy with Alexa. Okay. So how do you make sure that in your role, because you're a little bit like me.
Yes.
We're both proud, gritty northern women. How do you make sure you wouldn't come across as bossy and you would come across as do it because you want to, not because I say so? What tips have you got for me, Alison? What can I learn from you?
I don't think you can learn anything from me, Beverly. But I think what I do is, as I said before, I think it's about engaging with somebody on a personal level. That you don't want to go in with, okay, this is what I know. I know everything about this industry. But because I don't, and I think we learn every day. And I think it's about working with people. Probably an advantage I've got is that I'm from an operational background. So I've been there and I've introduced new things, and some have worked and some haven't. And you know, I know the pitfalls. I've not been 100% successful in everything I've tried to do. And I think as long as you learn from that and you're open to learn from that, then you're on the right path.
I agree with that. I remember on my last day as a traffic commissioner, having done 17 happy years as a TC, on the very last public inquiry I did, a question came up and I thought, I don't know the answer to that question. Which just shows, you know, we never know. You talk about communication. You have done a lot of coordinating in community-based road safety schemes. You've won lots of awards. First of all, who are those communities? And do you think that you've succeeded in that because of your communication skills?
So mainly it's through BREAK, the Road Safety, Safety Charity. That is very, very close to my heart. And I've done a lot of work with schools, so particularly around Road Safety Week, for the last, gosh, maybe 15 years, gone into schools at various ages, so from the very small children, but explain why they need to be visible when it's dark and why they need to keep away from the road, right up to the Too Young to Die programme, which is for sort of 16 to 18-year-olds who are starting to drive or be passengers with their friends. Which is a really interesting one. That's probably the one that I feel is most important because it's making a tangible difference straight away.
Okay.
I think communication skills are important, and it's very important, as we just mentioned about not being condescending. Pupils soon realise if you're just somebody there to talk at them. So the way that we do all that kind of training is very much around engagement, and it's about asking questions and getting views rather than talking at them. And I did some road safety badges for the scouts in South Wales, which was really nice. And that was mainly consisted of keeping out of the way of six-year-old boys running around the hole pretending to be cars. But it was really interesting to do. And some of the words of wisdom for those children was amazing.
Yes, they say never work with dogs and children, or animals and children. So why is Brake dear to your heart?
I've been involved with Brake for a long, long time, and I think it's because they're such a small charity with such a massive reach. So I enjoy the fact that they are campaigners and the fact that they are educators, but also the fact that anybody involved in any fatality on the road, somebody from Brake will ring them and they'll offer counselling and they'll offer support. I think for such a small charity to be able to say that they have that reach in the country is extraordinary. And everybody I've ever been involved with who've worked there have been absolutely passionate and committed about it. And it just makes you want to join in and to help them out. I just think they're a fantastic charity. And a lot of corporate sponsorship now, which I think is really important. So if anybody listening would like to get involved, then that was something that I really would definitely recommend you do, because I've trained lots and lots of Brake ambassadors in all the companies I've ever worked in. And to be able to train people in your workforce to be able to go out and do community-based things, it's a really nice thing to give back.
How can people not say no when you put that when you put that so nicely? So what do you do to relax?
I'm a huge reader and absolutely love music.
Okay, so what do you like to read? What's your favourite book?
Oh, my favourite book. I really like Terry Pratchett.
Okay.
I like history. I'm a bit of a history nerd, so anything around the Tudor period, I read an awful lot.
You've got a thing for Henry VIII?
Oh, no.
Have you seen Six?
I went 3 weeks ago to see it.
Did you enjoy it?
Amazing. I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. So I like going to the theatre as well, but I think music's probably my biggest passion.
What's your genre?
So I'm very much in the kind of classic rock and more modern rock genre. So things from when I was sort of in my teens and early 20s. So I still love Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Rush, so.
I'm impressed. I mean, not my music, but I'm impressed. And do you play an instrument? The recorder, maybe?
I have played drums, and I used to sing quite a lot. In fact, interesting fact for the listeners, I won Freckleton Music Festival when I was 12 years old, singing Little Jenny Wren.
I'm very impressed.
I'm sure you are.
I'm more interested in the drumming. So were you in a band?
I was in a band, singing though, in a band.
Right.
But yeah, just...
Lead or backing?
I've done some backing vocals and I've done some lead vocals as well. But I did have singing lessons for quite a while and did think that would probably be my career. And my singing teacher after about 3 years said, I think we've got as far as we can go, which I think quashed my expectations, and I decided to go another route.
And like so many people, you went into transport by mistake, not because when you said, when I grow up, I want to go into transport.
No, it's not something I'd ever thought about, but I think it's, once you're in the industry, it's very hard to get out because it's so varied. There's so many diverse things you can get involved in. And it's something, you know, I'm really interested in getting more women into the industry because it has become a little bit more balanced than it was when I first came.
A little bit. We haven't got enough time to talk about that. But a couple more questions before we have our second coffee of the day. You describe yourself as an innovative senior manager. It's a great word, innovative.
It is.
How are you innovative, Alison?
I think because I've got quite a quirky mind, I sometimes look at things from a very different perspective to other people. And I think sometimes when you, particularly if you've got somebody that's quite difficult to engage with, sometimes it almost shocks them into listening to you because you're coming from a slightly different angle. And I'm quite good at putting things into to ways people understand.
You're known for being a plain speaker.
I am a plain speaker.
Can you give us any examples of where you've been quite plain speaking when you've been talking to maybe groups of chaps of a certain age?
I think I mentioned before, we were talking in a room full of not senior managers, board level managers, and I was the only other lady in the room. And everybody
well, I think you were the only lady.
I was the only lady in the room. Everyone was speaking over me, and I was the first meeting I'd been to trying to kind of get some points across. So eventually I just had to ask somebody to say, can you just open a window? The smell of testosterone's making me feel quite nauseous. And everybody went quiet and then went, oh sorry. And then I said, can I just make some points now, please? And I think, you know, it's sometimes you have to be assertive, but do it in the right way.
And did they laugh?
They did, but they didn't mean it.
I love that. But you got their attention.
But I got their attention, which was the main thing, yeah.
And getting the respect, of course, is yeah, always difficult, always a challenge.
And I think that's not even, that shouldn't even be gender reliant. I think if you're a professional and you know what you're talking about, and you are, you know, in our industry, we're always there to actually help people become better. So why people wouldn't want to listen to that always surprises me a little bit.
So final question as we sort of wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience? Any experienced advice that you'd like to give to professionals as your sort of parting shot?
I think definitely the most important thing looking at any sort of transport safety is use data. So that everybody nowadays has telematics, but very few people use the data properly. So use that to inform you as to where your risk lies. But really, it's about encompassing it as a work activity, and it's just part of your health and safety. All health and safety legislation still relates to it. You know, it's a workplace. It's a piece of work equipment. So there's heaps of legislation around it. And I think people need to start incorporating that rather than have it separate, because I think in the past, it's fallen between two stools. So the fleet managers think it's health and safety. Health and safety think it's the fleet manager. And I think it's just really, it's time that it was all encompassed and looked at holistically.
Yeah, so that's not my department. That's somebody else's responsibility.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Well, you've been a delight to talk to, as always. I've asked you lots of questions. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask me? It's not compulsory.
Seeing as you asked me about my hobbies, I just wonder, what's your sort of musical taste?
Ah, well, you see, cue to tell you that I'm going to see the Eagles in June for about the sixth time. I shall be there in the front row gazing adoringly, and I'm not going to tell you which one I'm going to gaze adoringly at. But yes, yeah, so for me to relax, I like to go to music festivals. I live and work on the Isle of Wight.
Yes.
And last year I went to the Isle of Wight Festival. And this year I'm also going to the Isle of Wight Festival, having donated to charity to get some tickets.
Oh, lovely.
So if you see it on the television, look for me wearing, you know, lots of sparklers and things in my hair, and I'll be there.
I can tell you one very quick story. So I like to go to Download Festival. And as my daughter got older, she started coming with me. And my brother was watching it. He lives in Sweden. He was watching it on TV and then sent me a message in the one of the afternoons and said, I've just seen Eve, it's my daughter, crowd surfing. Which I didn't know about, but so there you go.
Well, there you
There's go. Always somebody watching.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, a delight to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Time for another croissant?
Absolutely. Thanks, Alison.
Thank you.
As we conclude another fascinating journey through the world of transport and logistics, we want to express our sincere appreciation for listening. Your support means the world to us. Keep the conversation going by reaching out on social media with your questions and feedback. We're eager to hear from you and continue exploring together. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and check out our other episodes online. Take care on the roads and see you in the next episode.